Chapter 11. The entire pack winds up back at the den within the next hour. Allison stays at the house with Lydia to help her father with some of the cleanup. Isaac and Boyd run back to the station to gather up the food they had brought, since Stiles' stomach is grumbling. They sit around and eat until everyone is back, including Danny. Stiles is spending some quality time in Derek's lap, typing on his laptop, saying he wants to look a few things up. He doesn't tell anyone what. "How does parents take it?" Scott asks Danny when he comes into the room. "They're so glad to see him that I don't think they really care about the magic stuff yet," Danny says, settling in to make himself a sandwich. Stiles nearly chokes on his sandwich. "You told Jackson's parents?" "We kind of had to when he disappeared like that," Danny says with a shrug. "Come on, Stiles. They would have wound up clued in eventually." "I guess," Stiles says, shaking his head. "Oh, whatever. I can't hate the jackass anymore. He was way more patient with 5-year-old me than I would have been." The others all exchanged glances and take a few minutes chewing on their sandwiches before Scott says, "So, you remember everything that happened?" Stiles nods. "Yeah, it feels kind of weird and disjointed, but I'm pretty sure I've got it all. You guys were all pretty patient with me, for that matter." He digs his thumb into Derek's ribs. "Especially you. Sorry I forgot about you, Sour Wolf." Derek growls at him, but overall he seems quite relaxed. "Seriously, though," Stiles says, "we're gonna have a lot to talk about tomorrow." He yawns and stretches. "But for now, I'm going to get some sleep and I expect to be cuddled." "We are all over that," Erica says, getting to her feet. 10 minutes later, they're asleep in a pile in the bedroom. Stiles rests his head against a wolf flank, scratches behind Derek's ears, and promptly passes out. He finds himself standing in the birch grove. Peter is lounging against one of the trees, as is his wont. "Thanks for the assist," Stiles greets him, plopping down next to him. Peter smirks at him. "It was fun to get a chance in the driver's seat," he says. "Your friend Jackson is quite the sorcerer now." "Yeah," Stiles says, and shrugs. "Whatever. Can't say he's ever gonna be my best buddy, but I can hardly argue with him saving my ass." Peter nods. "I assume that you agree that this incident is part of the larger pattern?"
"Yep."
"And you're finally going to take my advice and tell the rest of the pack about it?"
Stiles scowls at him.
"It's not like I ever said your advice was bad. I admitted you were right. I just, you know, didn't actually want to do it. But yeah, it's gone too far to be ignored now. But on the upside, I think I finally have an idea about who's behind this."
"Well, by all means," Peter says. "Let me hear it."
Stiles wakes up knowing that someone's watching him. Several someones. Practically everyone. Without opening his eyes, he says, "I remember everything." There's an audible sigh of relief from every corner of the room. He sits up and rubs a hand over his face, waking himself up. Derek is curled up in his wolf form, and when Stiles sits up, he pushes his face into Stiles' lap, growling and demanding attention. Stiles snorts with laughter and scratches behind his ears. "Busy day today," he says, rubbing both hands over his head and leaving his hair standing in lopsided spikes.
"You really want all of us at the meeting?" Isaac says, looking over.
"I do," Stiles says. "There's a lot to talk about."
"That sounds ominous,"
Lydia says, rolling her eyes.
Stiles shrugs.
"Nothing is more or less of a disaster before all this started. And hey, we're doing a lot better than we were yesterday. I just want to talk about some theories that I have." This gets him some suspicious glances, but the others leave him alone while he goes into the shower to get his thoughts in order. They don't have a lot of time for breakfast, and of course he hasn't been baking for days, so after some thought,
Stiles texts the relevant parties and asks if they can have the morning's meeting somewhere that they can eat. He still feels starving. Besides, maybe things will seem less dire over coffee and pancakes. Nobody has a problem with that, and they wind up at Ernie's Diner, a downtown cafe whose owner once had to deal with hexed water pipes. He gives them a table in the back, plenty of space, and 4 pots of coffee. Jackson is the last to arrive, with his usual mulish look on his face. Wilma's tail wags madly as she greets Stiles, and then Jackson slumps into a chair as far away from Deaton as possible. Danny pours him a mug of coffee and elbows him until he says hello to everyone. "Okay," Stiles says. "So, I know what happened, basically, but I'm pretty sure that by the time I was 12 or so, you guys weren't giving me all the details. Let's take it from the top. Tell me everything that happened." It takes time. Sheriff Stilinski does most of the narrating from their end, along with occasional contributions from Chris, Derek, and Scott. Jackson glowers, but tells Stiles about how he had gotten captured and everything that Eli had said to him. Stiles takes notes for most of it, but sometimes just sits with his eyes closed, deep in thought. "So here's the deal," he finally says. "Obviously, we are all very concerned about the fact that I nearly got wiped off the planet, and I don't think Eli was acting alone." Chris grimaces. "Well, he had recruited several other hunters." Stiles shakes his head. "What I mean is, I think he was acting on orders. Or at least that someone gave him this idea. I don't think he came up with it himself." He's getting a few skeptical looks, and he says, "I should start at the beginning, but, this is actually something I've been talking to Peter about lately, about how there seems to be a pattern in these events." "You think someone's targeting you?" Deaton asks. "Yeah, specifically a hunter. I think it started at the Conclave. Then they sent Gabriel Kahn and Ruben Gutierrez after us. Then the whole thing with Cora and Liliana Santos. And now this." "Those things are really only tangentially related," Chris says. "And one could make a pretty powerful argument that what happened with Cora was a good thing." "That's true," Stiles says. "But let's start with Ruben Gutierrez. He's a fellow that many people here met up close and personal. And a running theme I've heard is that he was far too stupid to come up with the plan that he did. Teaming up with Khan, using the Alpha Pack as a lure, framing me for Loesch's murder. It was clever, and that guy doesn't do clever. Arguments?" Chris sighs and shakes his head. Nobody else argues. The pack exchanges a glance like they're going to say something, but then stay quiet. "At the Conclave," Stiles says, "I kicked some major hornet nest. I already had something of a reputation, and basically proved it true. Not that I was kick-ass, but that I didn't play by the rules, that I won't honor all the traditions. Plus, I exposed the prisons, even if it was largely accidental. The whole thing is, what Peter and I have been talking about, is that there's just way too much happening for it to be a coincidence. Nobody's luck is as bad as mine. The whole thing with Khan and Gutierrez, Deucalion and Jennifer Blight showing up, the Falcon getting a hold of Peter's daughter, and now this? These are events designed to try to fuck with me." "But they're not connected," Tom says, "except by you." Stiles presses his lips together, then says, "See, the thing is, they are. There's one hunter who can be linked, if only peripherally, to all these events."
"And who's that?" Chris asks, frowning.
"Jim Stoddard," Stiles says. Chris's frown deepens. "He was at the Conclave. I met him briefly before I came out of the werewolf closet, and I'm pretty sure he was at my little seminar later. Then, he was one of the hunters who worked with Ruben Gutierrez to try to catch Khan. You gave me that list," he adds to Chris. "Then there's Liliana Santos. Yes, that was a good thing, especially for Cora. But I'm pretty sure that my response of sending out an anonymous call to arms to other hunters was not what anyone expected me to do. He probably figured that I would round up some werewolves and try to mount some sort of attack and get myself killed."
"How is Stoddard connected to that?" Derek asks, watching Styles carefully. Liliana worked with him on more than one occasion. After Chris here came in and took over the California territory, Liliana got itchy feet and wound up moving out east. She settled in New York for a few years and took some jobs with the Stoddard family. I can't prove that one of them goaded her into setting prisoners free, but I do know that her husband said she had agreed not to do it, but then suddenly did.
Chris lets out a breath. Is he connected to Deucalion at all?
I haven't found a connection yet. That honestly could have been a coincidence.
Styles shrugs.
Peter has warned me about taking conspiracy theorizing too far. I can't connect him to the Falcon either, and I can't directly connect him to Malia, but I can connect Liliana to Malia. Malia's biological mother is a were-coyote, and she's one of the people that Liliana rescued from the Gutierrez's prison. So she might have mentioned having a daughter to Liliana, who might have mentioned it to Jim Stoddard, who might have figured out who the father was somehow.
Lydia says, nodding along.
Right. Putting that aside, now there's Eli. Again, a man of subpar intelligence with a brilliant plan.
How do you figure subpar intelligence? Scott asks.
Dude, Jackson says with a snort.
If you'd met him.
Styles can't help but smile. Everyone knows that I have ties with my local druid. He had to be an idiot to cast that spell on me in Oregon. I think he was honestly just arrogant enough to figure that nobody would care. Which, again, idiot. But this, too? His plan was great. But from what you guys have told me, his execution was sloppy. You might not have found him in time, but you would have found him.
Tom nods. He left a lot of footprints. When it came to flying under the radar, he had no idea what he was doing.
So, Styles says, Eli was taking orders from somebody, and that somebody called him and told him to move when you were getting too close.
That was Stella, Chris says. My fault.
But I don't think it was, Styles says. I think Stella told you the truth when she said that Eli hadn't been in contact with her. From the way Jackson described the call, it sounded more like a call from a superior, someone who intimidated him.
He's right, Jackson says, mouth full of pancakes. He wasn't really happy about them calling.
How's Eli connected to Stoddard? Tom asks. Again, peripherally. Eli's originally from Vermont, and he worked with the Stoddards before Stella lost her druid and recruited him.
Chris pours more syrup on his pancakes. He's smart to act through intermediaries that don't have much of a connection with him. I'll admit it's likely enough. He's been straddling the fence on all these issues, and the way he's been so reasonable about everything makes me nervous. The prison he showed us was a sham, it turns out. We never saw the real one.
Son of a bitch, Derek mutters.
Wait, here's what I don't get, Scott says suddenly. So your theory is that Jim Stoddard or one of his lackeys was out there last night, and they killed Eli to cover their tracks, right? But then why did he wait to shoot Eli until after he had fixed you? He could have done it any time.
Yeah, Styles lets out a breath. Sometimes it seems to me like they're just messing with me. It reminds me of Sebastian Stone, actually. They're just playing games, setting up obstacles to see what I do with them. And it's like, if I die, too bad, time to find a new toy. But they were content to let it play out until he actively had to cover his tracks.
Well, that's sure as hell nothing like Jim Stoddard, Chris says. He can be sneaky when he wants to be, though from what I know of him, he would take a straightforward route when possible. But he's not the type of guy who would do this.
Yeah, and to be fair, anyone who just wanted to snipe me and have done with it could have done it 1,000 times by now, Styles adds with a shrug.
Derek growls at him, and Tom's mouth tightens into a thin line.
I'm just saying, I don't hide in my house. If that's all they wanted, it could be done.
We're assuming the sniper and the mastermind are the same person, Boyd says.
Occam's razor, Styles says. It would be weird if they weren't related somehow. Lydia spears a strawberry with her fork and says, "There are 100 reasons why he might not have taken the shot until that moment. Maybe he didn't get into position until then. Maybe his gun jammed. Maybe he had to sneeze. I mean, seriously, we can't know why he didn't shoot Eli until he did. We can only take an educated guess that he was doing it to keep Eli from telling us who was behind the curtain."
"So what do we do?" Danny asks.
"We stick together and we keep our eyes open," Stiles says. "I think we're pretty safe in San Francisco. We had almost an entire year there without incident. But this summer, anytime we're back, we're on constant buddy rule from now on."
"If we know who's behind it, can't we do something?" Erica asks.
"We don't know anything," Stiles says. "We have tenuous connections and a unifying theory, but we're still hundreds of miles away from proof. And I happen to agree with Chris on the fact that Stoddard doesn't seem like the type of guy who would torment me and set me up just for fun. I'm not sure of anything yet." To Chris, he adds, "I assume you have some ideas about the whole thing with the Hunter prison?"
"I have to talk to Julian and Mikhail," Chris says, shaking his head. "If the prison he showed us was faked, then the real one is probably a horror show. Maybe we can find it, but I know what you're getting at, and no, we don't dare confront him. Jim has too much pull. If he could convince the Winchesters or Drake or the Order of St. James to side with them or take up arms against us, we'd be screwed."
"Okay," Stiles sighs. "One thing at a time, I guess."
"But what the fuck is the end goal?" Erica asks. "These guys aren't going to give up their power, and they sure as hell aren't going to suddenly become decent people. What are we going to do? Kill them all?"
"There will be a way to remove them from power," Stiles says evenly. "We just have to find it." Tom shakes his head a little, and then reaches out to tousle his son's hair.
"How long have you been sitting on this?"
"The theory?" Stiles shrugs. 6 months, maybe? It was just a feeling for a long time. But then I ran it past Peter, and he thought it was reasonable. So I started doing some research. You know, in my copious free time. And yes, I knew I should tell you guys. I just didn't want to freak anybody out. Especially when I had no proof. And at the time, no suspects."
"Well, you're not going to keep anything like that from us ever again," Lydia says.
Stiles holds up one hand and says, "Scout's honor." Several of the pack groan. Stiles laughs a little and says,
"You know what, though? I'm not scared. Because I might be the legendary boy in red, and people might spread rumors about me, but I have the best pack, the best family, the best friends and allies in the world. You guys saved my fucking bacon this month, and I did pretty much zilch to help you out. Anyone who comes looking for trouble is going to get all the trouble they want. But if they think I'm the only one they need to watch out for, they are dead wrong."
"True," Scott says, nodding.
"You were pretty useless this time," he adds.
And Stiles punches him in the shoulder, but everyone is laughing. Deaton clears his throat.
"I believe it's time to address the elephant in the room," he says. "Jackson, I've done some research on this Marzana. It could have been a lot worse, but a demon will always be seeking to corrupt you and steal your power. You know that."
"Yeah," Jackson says, "but I also know that there have been cases of sorcerers developing mutual respect with their literal demons and coexisting with them for years, so I don't see why we need to go all exorcist after one measly day."
"It isn't just that," Deaton says. "Your magic was bound for a reason. You have a history with black magic, and while I understand that you invaded Eli's mind to save Stiles, that's not an encouraging sign. I have to take this before the Druidic Council."
Jackson rolls his eyes and says, "Fine, whatever you feel like you have to do."
"And you'll abide by their decision?" Deaton asks, watching him closely.
"Ask me again once we know what it is," Jackson says.
Deaton rubs a hand over his face.
"Again, not exactly encouraging." Yeah, but that isn't Jackson being a warlock, Danny says, with a half smile on his face. That's Jackson being Jackson. Jackson scowls and elbows him in the ribs. Danny smirks and blows him a kiss. Stiles pours himself another mug of coffee and says, I'd like to testify before the Druidic Council, just so I can make the events clear and corroborate Jackson's account of them. Deaton sighs. All right, that should be fine. Before much longer, their plates are clear, and everyone is finishing off their coffee. Derek settles the bill, and they start to leave in clumps. The pack is headed back to the den. Everyone has gotten the day off from jobs and responsibilities, so they can watch movies and be lazy all day. As they're drifting apart, Jackson walks up to Lydia and says, Hey, talk to you for a sec? Okay, Lydia says. She stops walking, but doesn't move away from the others. Jackson gets the hint, and his cheeks flush slightly pink, but he doesn't let it stop him. I'm sorry for what I did to you. I was a complete piece of shit. You don't have to forgive me or anything. I just want you to know that I'm really sorry, and I'll never do anything like that again to anyone. Thank you, Jackson, Lydia says. I appreciate that a lot. Jackson huffs out a sigh of relief and rubs a hand over the back of his head. Okay, yeah, thanks for listening. He turns and walks away rapidly. Stiles glances at Lydia. She watches Jackson for a minute, then turns and gives Stiles a slight nod. Stiles jogs after him. Derek follows at a safe distance. It only takes a few moments for Stiles to catch up with Jackson. Hey! Jackson gives him an annoyed glare and shoves his hands down into his pockets. So, you remember all that stuff that happened in the basement?
Yeah,
Stiles says. He sees Jackson give him a sideways look and says,
I won't tell anyone you're a wonderful tenor. If you don't tell anyone, I had a temper tantrum over my sandwich having mustard on it.
Deal, Jackson says immediately, and he almost smiles.
So, Stiles says, you remember back when I said you would never be part of our pack, ever?
He asks, and Jackson gives him a glare.
Well, I think we can safely say that I never would have anticipated even a tenth of all this shit happening, so...
He sees that Jackson is still glowering and puts a more serious face on.
There's a place for you here if you want it.
Jackson scoffs. You kidding? He asks. I've seen how touchy-feely you guys are. You'd probably try to hug me or something if I joined your pack. Stiles has to bite back a grin.
It's a distinct possibility, yeah.
Pass, Jackson says. But then he becomes serious, too. It's enough to just... Yeah, you know.
Yeah,
Stiles says. Besides, I'd wind up bailing your ass out of trouble all the time. I've got better ways to spend my life.
Probably true, Stiles says cheerfully. Still, the offer stands.
Yeah, whatever, Stilinski. Jackson shakes his head. Come on, Wilma, he adds, and turns the corner without another word. Stiles just shakes his head and watches him go for a few minutes before he heads back to join the others. Jackson tells his parents everything. It's a relief he hadn't expected, even though it takes hours. He sits there with a cup of hot chocolate his mother made him, while Tanya watches cartoons with Wilma, who makes an excellent babysitter. Mike rubs a hand over his face when he talks about the way feeling unwanted had plagued him, and Connie cries when he tells them about the things he had done while under the influence of black magic. He tells them about how he nearly killed Danny, and how Stiles decided to spare his life when he easily could have, and maybe should have, just put him down. He talks about the way Deaton helped him find a place to ground himself from, and how much knowing the story of his birth parents had helped him. He tells them all about magic and how it works and what it feels like, and the kinds of things he can do. He talks about getting Wilma as his familiar and how much it helped, and how having Tanya to look out for had further stabilized him. He tells them about Eli and Marzana
and everything that had happened in the last few days.
So that demon, it's still inside you? Connie asks, and her hands twitch a little as she crosses herself.
Yeah, sort of, Jackson says, and shakes his head. It's not in me. It'd be more accurate to say it's with me. Like, you know, a little shoulder devil.
This isn't funny, young man, Connie chokes out.
Look, don't freak out, Jackson says. It's not a demon, like, not the way you think of them. We just don't have a better name for them. It's like, it's a spirit, okay? Like a creature of energy. It's not evil, it's just amoral. It doesn't believe in petty concepts like good and evil.
Connie and Mike exchange a look. Mike says hesitantly,
It won't hurt you?
Well, I won't let it, Jackson says.
But no, I mean, we get along okay. There are stories of people who formed symbiotic relationships with demons that have lasted decades. It's not always the kind of thing where it takes over. You just have to arm wrestle it into having respect for you. That's all.
Mike lets out a breath.
Well, if you're sure. I mean, God knows you know a lot more about this stuff than we do. Though, a lot of things do make sense in retrospect.
Yeah, Beacon Hills is a pretty fucking weird place, Jackson agrees.
Language, Jackson! For goodness sake! Connie says. You know that the day before you disappeared, Tanya was calling some character on a cartoon an ass face?
Jackson bites back a grin. That's my girl, he says.
Oh, you're terrible, Connie says, laughing despite herself. She's going to go to preschool and start swearing up a storm, and everyone's going to think I'm a horrible mother.
No one will think that. Trust me, Jackson says. And if they do, I'll beat the shit out of them. Nobody talks about my mom that way.
Connie leans over and kisses him on the cheek.
What's going to happen with the Druidic Council? Mike asks, still frowning. It sounds sort of like a trial, isn't it?
Yeah, Jackson says. Deaton will be the prosecutor. Want to come be my legal defense?
Absolutely, Mike says. I'll talk rings around the bastards.
Jackson smirks at his father. Seriously, though, I think it'll be fine. I mean, okay, technically I broke a few rules, but with magic, it's the intent that matters. I mean, there are a few lines you can't cross. Like, you can't murder someone with magic, no matter how good your intentions are, because that leaves, like, major stains on your mojo. But this, given the reasons I did it, and the fact that Styles has offered to speak up for me, I think I'll be fine. They'll put me on probation, make sure Deaton keeps an eye on me.
Won't they want to exercise you? Connie asks. Is that the proper term?
Yeah, Jackson says. They might. So what? I don't need this thing.
How kind of you to say so,
Marzano remarks, clearly amused.
If they try to exercise you, I'll leave of my own volition and pick you back up later. They'll never know the difference. Trust me.
Super, Jackson replies.
I'm still coming with you, Mike says, whether you actually need a legal defense team or not.
If you really feel it's necessary, Jackson says,
with a dramatic roll of his eyes that makes Connie laugh quietly.
But that won't be until later. Now, if you guys don't mind, I have a pressing engagement with a three-legged dog and a stick. Gotta burn off some of that energy she's got from being pent up for days, or she's gonna lick me to death.
Well, we should go to the park, Connie says, standing up. It's a lovely day. Let's all go together.
Jackson just rolls his eyes again, and then slings an arm around his mother's shoulders.
Okay, Mom, he says. Whatever you say.
You know what I want to do today? Derek asks, leaning in to breathe Styles' scent as he gets behind the wheel of the Jeep.
What do you want to do today?
Styles replies.
I want to play Trivial Pursuit, Derek says. With you. I want you to kick my ass with all the random bullshit you have no business knowing. Styles grins widely.
Oh, I will kick your ass, he says. Lydia will still beat me, though.
She's a trivia machine, Derek agrees.
Styles drives a few blocks in silence.
Not that I don't want to sit around and play trivia games with the pack all afternoon, but can we make a quick stop first?
Sure,
Derek says, and starts to ask where, but then he sees the set of Styles' shoulders, smells the way sorrow has permeated his scent, and realizes he doesn't have to ask. Styles drives another few miles, and then stops outside a small cemetery. He gets out of the car and walks through the graveyard without saying anything. Derek folds Styles' hand in his and walks with him. The rest of the pack has pulled up their cars behind them, but they maintain a respectful distance. Styles stops at the gravestone that reads, Claudia Stilinski, 1971 to 2003. He sits down beside it, folding his legs Indian style. Derek sits down behind him, letting Styles' back rest against his chest.
I miss her like crazy so much of the time, Styles finally says. But this week was like, I realized how much the sorrow had faded. Not that I'm not still sad she's gone, but I can look back on my memories of her and smile and just be glad that I had such an amazing mother, even though it was only for 8 years. I can watch my dad be happy with Melissa and think that's awesome instead of resenting it, like I would have when I was younger. I can see the way everything about her shaped who I am, and I think about how intensely my mother loved life and her family and everything. I can do that now. But for a few days this week, God, that pain and loss was just as fresh as it was the day after she died.
Derek gives him a little squeeze and says nothing.
And I guess I just wanted to thank you, Styles says. You were really amazing this week in general, but especially that day. The day I was 9 and missed her so bad. I wish you had been there when it really happened. Because what you said helped me so much.
I just thought about what I wish someone had said to me, Derek says quietly. Styles nods and lets out a breath.
There's a lot to unpack, I guess. But thanks.
He turns slightly so he can bump his forehead against Derek's temple.
I don't remember a lot of what happened with Eli last night. I guess by that point I was just too young to really comprehend what was happening around me. Peter gave me the lowdown, and I want you to know I wasn't afraid of you. He was wrong about what he said. I mean, obviously I was freaked out and you were a dude with fangs and what the fuck was that about? But I always knew you. No matter if I was 15 or 9 or 1, every time I looked at you, I knew you. I could feel what we were to each other, even if I didn't understand it or know why it was there. I just wanted you to know that. It doesn't matter what happens, no one is ever going to take me away from you.
Derek feels a lot of the tension go out of his shoulders.
Thanks. That helps. A lot.
After a moment, Styles smiles up at him. Do you think my mom is watching us from heaven? The way Peter talked about it, I guess everyone's all reunited and chill up there, right?
Derek laughs quietly. Yeah, I bet she's pulling her hair out.
Are you kidding? My mom thinks I'm awesome. Styles springs to his feet. She's up there with your parents and Laura, and they watch the shit we get up to and brag to everyone else in heaven about how badass their kids turned out to be.
Oh, I bet, Derek says, getting to his feet as well. They send postcards down to Gerard and Kate in hell to tell them how much ass we kick.
Like they don't already know, Styles says, laughing delightedly. He grabs Derek's hand and swings their arms back and forth. They rejoin the rest of the pack, and Styles says, Let's head back to the den so I can make muffins and kick everyone's butt at Trivial Pursuit, he says.
Yeah, maybe you'll luck out and get a question about geology and finally put those 2 semesters to some use.
Scott teases him.
What? Rocks are interesting! Styles protests, and everyone laughs. The end. The music used in this podfic is Famous Last Words by My Chemical Romance. The cover art for this podfic was created by me, but it was heavily inspired by the gorgeous cover art by Kylie L for the text series. If you enjoyed this podfic, please leave feedback both for myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. Thanks for listening! Reader's notes. Okay, here's the thing. I hate amnesia fic. Like, just amnesia as a trope is just not my thing. At all. It's, yeah. Honestly, if I find out that something's about amnesia, I avoid it a lot. Very strongly. Be this a TV episode or a fic or whatever, like even if the premise is super strong. So I put off reading this fic for quite a long time because I was like, ugh, it's amnesia fic. And I really want to read the next one in the series, but amnesia fic, I really hate it. And honestly, I was really pleasantly surprised when I read it because it avoids a lot of the stuff that I hate about amnesia fic, which I won't get into, but this fic does manage to avoid it. And it's not, like, I mean, Styles has amnesia in it, but it's not about his amnesia. It's about solving the magic that is done on him, and the amnesia is kind of feels like a way to get him out of the picture. It's like, okay, look, we've had, you know, this group of the pack do things. We've had this group of the pack do things. Styles is always doing things, and Styles is always the one that figures everything out. So what happens if Styles isn't there? Oh no, now we have to figure something out without Styles. But how do we get without Styles? And, you know, Styles doesn't remember. And in that way, it doesn't bother me. But when recording, I once again kind of hit this wall of, ugh, it's amnesia fic. I'm about halfway through when I'm recording this. And, it's not bad. It's not bad. Like, I mean, amnesia will never be my favorite trope. It'll always be a trope that I kind of hate. But this fic, actually, it's like the one amnesia fic that I actually like. Speaking of my terrible memory, segue. So I have a reader's note in one of the previous ones about how the first couple were really solid in my memory, and how the last couple were really fresh in my memory, and that there was this whole chunk in between that were really muddled. Well, it has now been long enough that the last couple are no longer fresh in my memory. Like, in this fic, I'm recording this reader's note in chapter 5, and Jackson has just gone missing, and I completely forget why Jackson is missing. I'm pretty sure he ends up with a demon in his head at the end of all of this. So I think maybe he's kidnapped. Maybe. But I don't know. I have completely forgotten. So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so don't expect any insightful whatever. I still remember who the ultimate bad guy is. That's been interesting reading this, knowing who's behind it. Ah ha ha! That's who it was! Another recurrence of character that came back that I did not think would come back. Though, thankfully this time, the character that was suddenly the main bad guy was a character that was actually a character in the previous fic. Unlike, Gutierrez there, the last time. Yeah, and Eli had a pretty distinct voice, even in the last one, Mr. Peter Pettigrew there. I did not call that. Again, I did not remember who it was. I did remember that it wasn't Jackson, or that there was some sort of twist with Jackson, but definitely did not call Eli. Knowing who is behind it, because, I mean, spoilers, it gets revealed at some point. But knowing who actually is behind it is really interesting. Yeah, really interesting.
He takes a bite out of a croissant sandwich and keeps talking with his mouth full, of course.
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high.
Wow, that was super off-key.